What would you do if your child started exhibiting unnatural behavior? Can Ouija boards lead to possessions? Is it possible for a single person to be possessed by 10 or more demons? Today, we test the believability of the exorcism of Roland Doe.
Welcome to Believing the Bizarre,
where we dive into the unknown and the unusual
and tell you whether or not we find it believable.
That is right. Charlie, how are you doing today?
Oh, man. I'm hot. It's hot as f***.
I like the hesitation there, though. You're like, there's children listening. Like, wait a minute. I edit this.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm excited for this one. I've been kind of waiting on it. It's like, we needed to get back to the creepy creeps.
Yes. I kind of know the story.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? Maybe there's some things I'll talk about that you won't know, but there might be some stuff that you know that I don't talk about. You could look up 10 different sources about this topic, and you'll probably find almost 10 different stories.
Wow.
I feel like that's kind of like the route that we have to take with paranormal stuff.
Man, I'm so...
You know what I'm talking about, though. Like, you'll research one topic, and you'll go to, like, 5 different sources, and they're all a little different.
Yeah.
What always pisses me off, which actually happens a little bit in here, thankfully, the whole thing's a pseudonym. I saw different names.
Mm-hmm.
Different years, different names, different ages, different other stuff.
Nothing's,
Can everybody that ever writes a blog on this stuff just get together and make it, even if it's a lie, can we all do the same lie?
Yeah, same lie. Nothing's congruent, is what I wanted to say.
Right. So with that said, let's dive right in. I already kind of hinted at it, so I want to say this. The name Roland Doe is a pseudonym. It's not his real name.
Good.
It's likely changed for privacy, but also, and my joke's always, well, or it's fake. But also, he was like 13, 14 years old when it happened.
Yeah, he's
so
a kid.
He's a child. He's a minor.
He's a child.
So here's the first inconsistency. If you type in Robbie Mannheim, it'll bring you to the exorcism of Roland Doe.
Really?
So you would assume that would be his real name.
Mm.
But if you also search Ronald E. Hunkeller, it'll also be like, that's the boy from the exorcism of Roland Doe.
Are these all just like pseudonyms?
Thankfully, it doesn't matter because the only name I'm going with for the entirety of this episode is Roland Doe.
Okay, good.
Which is wrong, but there's like a good self-awareness in being wrong. It's like when you know you're wrong, it makes it a little better. Fun fact, for all of you out there that don't know, and I don't know, you know what? We might have touched on this during the movie review, not really review, the movie, when we talked about The Exorcist.
The sets.
Yeah, the haunted sets, that's right. I think I might have alluded to this, but this exorcism possession case is what inspired The Exorcist.
Yeah, I know the story.
There was a diary that was found by one of the priests, Father Bishop, and... it was locked away. That's why I say it was found. It wasn't like he buried it like a dog, you know, with
the priest's name was Father Bishop?
Well, his name was Bishop. I believe it was Raymond Bishop.
Father was his title.
Isn't that what they call it?
Yeah, it's Father. Father's a priest, and then it's funny because a bishop is next in line.
Oh, okay.
That was a Catholic joke.
Okay. It went right over. I'm glad you broke it down because I wouldn't know. That'd be like if my name was Sir or like Guy. Like, hey, Mr. Guy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, it's redundant. All right, so let's begin. So the year is 1949, and Roland grew up with his family in Cottage City, Maryland, which is described as a small little community not far from Washington, D.C. Probably Ravens fans, that's okay. Or, I guess, the Washington football team. So Roland grew up in a household with adults only. There were no other siblings. He didn't have any kids to play with. This was before PlayStation and Xbox, so he was expected to go outside and talk or kick cans. I don't know. Talk to trees. I don't know what kids did back then. I don't know football back then.
Oh, they played jacks.
They lived in black and white, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They didn't make colors of the 60s.
Right. But the kids that did know Roland, they considered him quiet, a little withdrawn, but overall a pretty nice kid. Chill. Kept to himself. He didn't have that many friends. Soon he's going to have a ton of friends, which is a terrible joke. But there's going to be a lot of people around him soon.
Oh, wow.
So what did he like to do? A large portion of his time was spent playing and interacting with his Aunt Harriet when she visited from St. Louis. And she was big into spiritualism. She liked to do seances, Ouija board, try and communicate with the dead, believing that if she was able to speak to people than dead, they knew things about this world and our lives that we didn't know, and they'd be able to inform us about things that would might happen in the future. Which I just want to make a point here, because I think everybody's experienced this. I love when you're watching a movie or playing a video game, and you clearly know they're saying Ouija board, but it's, I think it's trademark, so they're just like, ooh, the spirit board,
yeah,
or the ghost
board. Spirit board, the right. Talking board.
The talking board, right. It's like, we all know what you're talking about, just saying. But unfortunately, like all good things, it must come to an end, and his favorite Aunt Harriet passed away. But Roland was crafty, and he thought about everything he learned from his aunt. So she wasn't really gone, right? He could still reach out and contact her, right? Of course, we're talking about the Ouija board.
Oh, Roland.
Yeah, don't Roland. You literally told me yesterday, we should get out a Ouija board and play.
Not to contact our dead aunts.
And I said, what good would come from that? And you're like, we'd get scared. I think that's literally word for word.
I'm not wrong.
I would get terrified. So he found the board, he set up the board, and he made an attempt to contact his late aunt. His plan was to connect with her through the Ouija board, but obviously was unsuccessful. But it became increasingly clear soon enough that Roland had connected with someone or something through the board, because strange occurrences started happening in their household.
So was he playing by himself?
Yes, his family, they knew about it because they knew the aunt and they knew them interacting, but it wasn't like, they were like, all right, family time. I put Trouble and Monopoly away, but look at this new game. It's called Ouija. OG? I'm trying to think of how Ouija's spelled and how like a parent would butcher that.
O-I-G.
O-I-G.
Yeah, the O-I-G board.
What piece do you want to be? I call the planchette.
Are you, can you play by yourself?
You put both hands on it. You like put your hand on the other one and you're moving it yourself. It's, well, okay, let me put it this way. Some people play chess by themselves.
It's true.
Let me ask you this. If you play chess by yourself, how can you not be biased towards one team?
I know, like white's gonna win.
Right, and somehow, some way, someone out there could take this racially, and obviously we don't mean that. I just mean in general, you have to be rooting for one side.
Yeah, can't just unbiased.
What human could play chess? There's probably some out there like, yeah, I do it every day.
Probably.
And you're a freak. I'm just kidding. You're probably way smarter than I am. Exactly. But I've never understood the concept. Like, solitaire is a game you play by yourself, but you're like, it's you against the deck of cards. Where people that play chess by themselves, and I'm not saying on your phone against a computer, I mean literally you set up the board and you're both, yeah. Maybe it's an exercise if you get up every time, every turn.
No, it's a strategy thing.
So back to Roland. So what strange occurrences started happening? Well, for one, they started hearing a weird dripping sound, like the sound of water dripping over and over again. So naturally, they thought there was a pipe that had a leak, or maybe a sink was leaking and dripping water or wasn't fully turned off. So they went around, they checked their pipes, they checked their sinks, but there was no source of this dripping sound. Then they started hearing scratching sounds. Now, Roland's father thought that they might have rats or some other rodent in the walls, but they found no cause for the noise. They even hired an exterminator who tore up floorboards, put poison in there, and was trying to do his best, but even he agreed with the father that there was no evidence that there was any form of rodent infestation. But the scratching sounds persisted, and they came from multiple different areas of the house. It seemed like no matter where you went, you really couldn't get away from it. So kind of just like minor inconveniences at first, right? Well, things only got worse from there. The scratching turned into what Roland described as footsteps that would walk the length of his bed during the nighttime. Roland explained that maybe it was his aunt that was trying to contact him. So to test the theory, Roland and his mom had an idea. Because in their mind, they're not thinking creepy. They're like, I used this Ouija board. I was trying to contact Aunt Harriet. I think she's here. I think she's trying to contact us. So Roland and his mom, I don't know where his dad's at. He's probably working late. And they're like, okay, Aunt Harriet. Aunt Harriet, can you hear me? If this is you, Aunt Harriet, knock 3 times. Sure enough, within seconds from beneath them, because they're on the second floor in his bedroom, they hear knock, knock, knock. Completely beside herself and wanting to eliminate with all shadow of a doubt any chance that this was a coincidence, Roland's mother asked again, Aunt Harriet, if this is you, knock four times. And again, knock, 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 knock. Now, if this is where the story ended, if this was the end of the podcast, they and us, this would be a story about how a young boy contacted his aunt, and it'd be kind of remarkable.
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure, but...
But that's not what happened.
Some demons just like...
they think I'm the aunt. They're like cracking, you know, because, all right, time to get in there. So unfortunately, things took a turn for the worse. While the scratching continued for days, Roland's bed would start shaking. Furniture would move completely on its own, and then objects in the home would levitate and then shoot across the room. In fact, an armchair with Roland sitting in it lifted inches off of the ground and tossed Roland off of it. And this was during a family event. Uncles, aunts, his parents, they saw it happen. They literally sat in the chair and tried themselves to tip the chair over, and they weren't able to do it.
Bad sign.
And this is kind of like the cliche, but this is kind of before the cliches were cliche. They had a portrait of Jesus Christ on the wall, which began shaking violently and just banging against the wall.
You're like, Jesus, can you stop? And he's like, what?
He's like, it's not my fault, bro. So understandably, the family was kept on edge. But through the craziness of it all, they did notice one small detail, one through line in their crazy occurrences. These strange experiences only happened when Roland was nearby. And he started showing signs that something was wrong. He would start howling, screaming, and using voices that didn't belong to him. Paranormal occurrences would follow him to school, where witnesses like teachers and other students reported that desks would just start sliding across the rooms on their own. So before we go any further, I want to ask you this. If you had a child and all of this stuff was happening, what action would you take?
I think my first thought is take him to, like, maybe probably a priest.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably a priest.
Well, you're deep into the paranormal world. You're not typical horror movie father dad.
Right. Yeah, no, not me.
We just bought the damn house. It's just somebody left a window open. That's what knocked the chair over.
It's just a woman crying in the corner.
Horror movie father dad. Is that now that there you go, father dad. That is like its own trope, and I love it.
Yeah, me too.
So what did the Does do? Which is ironic because that's not actually their last name. It's kind of funny calling them that. But that's what I'm gonna say, because that's what the episode's about. So what did the Does do? Well, they got to the point where they started considering moving from Maryland, because in their mind, okay, maybe this house is haunted. Maybe something in here is haunted. Maybe even Roland caused it to happen. Maybe the Ouija board let something out, but maybe it's attached to the house, not us.
They said hoping very hard.
Yeah. With a lot, you know, in hope font.
Yeah.
Around that time, they reached out to Pastor Luther Miles Schulz. Roland's parents told him about the crazy experiences happening at their home, what was happening with Roland, and Pastor Schulz invited Roland and his mother to spend the night at his house. I was going to say home and house. To spend the night at his house to see if he would witness anything that they were talking about.
That's very kind.
And he did. So Roland's mother slept in a separate room, where Pastor Schulz and Roland slept in two separate twin beds in the same room so that he could observe what was happening.
I don't like that.
They could have been sleeping in one queen size bed. Are you, how are you upset that they're sleeping in twin size?
I could have just said he
invited. Could have said he invited Roland over. We don't know what happened.
Just Roland. Hey, no, mom, you get out of here. Me and Roland, we're spending the night together.
So Pastor Schulz claimed that he heard those scratching sounds coming from inside the walls, and then he witnessed Roland's bed start shaking. Schulz recommended that Roland get out of the bed and head over to the armchair instead. And then as soon as Roland got out of that bed, it stopped shaking. And then in what he described as like a trance-like state, Roland curled up into a ball in the chair, which then shifted on its one side, and once again, it pushed Roland out of the chair. But he didn't brace for the fall. He didn't brace for anything, any impact. He was absolutely locked in this trance-like state. So then, similar to Roland's family, Schultz went over to the chair, sat in it, tried to tip it over himself, which he was unable to do. That night ended with Roland having scratch marks on his face from repeatedly being shoved into the springs from underneath the bed by an unknown force.
Wow. That's why you need a Tempur-Pedic. So this kid's like falls on the ground and Therese is like, I gotta go take a seat on this chair to make sure. This kid's just like bleeding on the ground.
Well, it went bed, chair, floor, ended up underneath the bed and getting pushed up against it. It's like, I think what actually happened is he laid down like a blanket.
Yeah.
Because he's thinking if he's on the floor, then nothing can vibrate or shake or throw him off. But then he slid underneath the bed. And so if you picture, you know, somebody's upper half underneath a bed, and then you just start getting up, pushed up, 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 up until your face just starts smashing against.
Oh, I hate that.
You know, if you didn't believe it was paranormal, and then imagine the next morning, like he's making eggs and his mom comes in and he's like, yeah, your son's pretty fucked up. And good thing she's bought into this paranormal stuff. Yeah. Otherwise, lawsuit.
Oh, yeah.
Pastor souls. The next morning, he advised Roland's parents to contact a Catholic priest who was familiar with exorcism. So very similar to what you were suggesting that you would do. So obviously we'll get into the details. That's pretty much the remainder of this episode. But I have to say, from the research I found, because I didn't get like an exact timeline, they were saying it's like 6 weeks of exorcisms. 6 weeks.
Wow.
Like, that is crazy to me. They need to start paying priests by the project, not by the hour.
That's a month and a half.
That's like when you see like construction workers, and you guys are great. You do more work than I would be able to do, but you know they draw some projects out to make, you know, because the longer you have a project, the more. It's like an office job. It's like maybe there's a stat out there where if like a Catholic priest works for 8 hours on an exorcism, they're really only getting 2 hours of work in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the rest, they're on TikTok and playing Among Us.
This Roland guy's a little sus. Power
of Christ compels you. So the first person that attempted, and I will say, we are joking.
Priests do obviously. The
Lord's work. First person that attempted, and I do mean attempted, to exorcise the demons out of Roland was a priest named Edward Hughes. He was a younger priest. He just happened to be the first one they went to. Probably needed a couple more years under his belt of priesthood. But, you know, take what you can get when you got shaking beds and scratching noises. So he conducted his exorcism at Georgetown University Hospital near Washington, D.C. However, it was not completed. He claimed that the first time he ever met Roland, the air instantly went bitingly cold. They had Roland strapped to his bed at the Georgetown University Hospital as Father Hughes began the ritual. But not long after Father Hughes began his prayers, the boy slipped a hand out of his restraints, grabbed on to one of the bed springs with all of his might, broke it out, and used it to slash the priest's arm, resulting, obviously, in the exorcism ritual being halted because Father Hughes had to leave the room entirely because where he stabbed him was in his left arm, and he got him from the shoulder all the way down to the wrist.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, it required over 100 stitches to fix his arm, and they say that he still wasn't able to ever fully use it to maximum capacity again.
Good thing he was at the hospital.
That's true.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it was a real hospital and not just a strap kids to beds and pour holy water on them.
It's Georgetown hospital. University. Some guy's just trying to get an A.
Yeah. Father Hughes also claimed that the devil's face appeared in the leg of Roland.
In the leg?
In the leg and the skin. He saw the face appear of the devil. So with this exorcism attempt failed, and Roland's health starting to deteriorate, and more scratches appearing on his body, his demeanor became very cold and very detached. So enough was enough for Roland's family, and they decided to leave Maryland and travel to St. Louis, where they had more family, because remember, that was where Aunt Harriet was from.
Yeah, yeah.
I did see an article but I only saw it in one. I still like to say it when I see something like that, but if I don't see repetitive, I like to kind of point out that it was a one-off. But it claimed that not only did Father Hughes see the devil's face in his leg, but Roland's family saw the words Lewis spelled out in scratch marks on his body, which they took as St. Louis, like, get out of here.
Oh.
That was the way they took it. Because they were, and I think it was, they were influenced because they had already been thinking about leaving Maryland, and the only place they were considering going was St. Louis. Man. So I think it just kind of lined up. I don't know if that's true. Obviously, we don't know if anything
even
if it
was true. I would feel like, I think I'd be like, definitely not St. Louis then.
Anywhere but St. Louis.
Yeah.
And then they go to St. Louis and they got mugged. That's St. Louis. That's the end of the story. I've been to St. Louis. Have you?
No.
Scary, dude. Unless you, the listener, are from St. Louis, because then it's like my favorite city. So they move there. They're with their family. They're like, oh, it's behind us. It's in the past. All is good. However, they did not escape. The scratching, the bed shaking, the terrifying behavior continued. So it was there that Roland's family reached out to St. Louis University professor and priest Raymond Bishop, also known as
Father Bishop.
That's right. From what I saw, I think it was his, it was either Roland's cousin or a different aunt that was actually going to the university, had a class with the Father Bishop and asked him on his behalf.
Oh,
if he would look into it.
That's cool.
So as a religious, caring man, but still naturally skeptical, which I appreciate, Father Bishop decided that he would visit Roland's home, kind of check out, see what was going on. So he comes over, you know, he says a few prayers. He walks around, he's blessing the home with holy water. Obviously, because of Roland and his condition, he decided to pay a little extra attention in Roland's room.
Yeah.
So he put a little bit of extra holy water on the bed, and he even pinned a small religious symbol to Roland's pillow. So shortly after Roland went to sleep that night, they heard the bed violently shaking along with angry shrieks. When they rushed upstairs to see what was happening, Roland was in the center of his bed, still as a statue, while his bed continued shaking. Father Bishop quickly sprinkled more holy water onto the bed, which caused the shaking to temporarily stop. But soon after, Roland's shrieks and guttural cries began again. Roland lifted up his shirt, and he immediately developed crisscrossing scratches on his chest, which they claimed appeared as if something inside of him was desperately trying to get out. At this point, Father Bishop knew shit was all wrong. So he contacted a colleague for assistance, Father Bodern. Father Bodern and Father Bishop were granted permission from the Archbishop to perform another exorcism. So to avoid getting injured like Father Hughes, the priest decided to make detailed preparations for the next exorcism. A priest by the name of Walter Halloran was called to assist Bodern in the psychiatric wing of what was then called the Alexan Brothers Hospital. And another priest named William Van Rue was available to assist just in case. So the boy was strapped down more securely to the bed to prevent injury because obviously they didn't want what happened to Father Hughes in Georgetown to happen to them. He was pretty much in lockdown at this hospital. And this is where it gets stretched out. And it's pretty repetitive that you can't really go a day by day by day.
Yeah.
But the scratches continued and his disposition just kept getting worse and worse. He was thrashing, vomiting, spitting as much as he could on the priests. Red welts started appearing all over his chest as prayers were read. He began urinating on himself every time he could.
Mm-hmm.
It's claimed that his strength was so unnatural for a young boy that sometimes it took six or more of the men to hold him down.
Wow.
And when Father Bodern asked for the demon's name, four letters appeared on Roland's stomach. H-E-L-L. So Father Bishop actually kept a diary during the exorcism, which I mentioned at the top. It's what they found. It was locked away in here with all this, which led to a story being written about it, an article, which led to the book, The Exorcism. This was kind of like the content that was used. Here are just a couple of entries that I found on the interweb. So March 18th, 1949, quote, next, the fathers began the litany of saints as indicated in the exorcism ritual. In the course of the litany, the mattress began to shake. Parentheses, Roland, because it's a pseudonym. So I'll just roll with that the entire time. Roland was awake. The shaking ceased when Father Bodrin blessed the bed with holy water. The prayers of the exorcism were continued, and Roland was seized violently so that he began to struggle with his pillow and the bed clothing. The arms, legs, and head of Roland had to be held by three men. And then April 11th, 1949, quote, at midnight, the fathers planned to give Roland Holy Communion, but Satan would have no part of it. Even while the institution of the Blessed Sacrament was explained to Roland, his body was badly scratched and branded. Unquote.
My God.
So this was days and weeks. The priests were exhausted.
Yeah.
But it just, they knew what they had to do. They obviously were believing what was happening, and yeah. their mind and their heart and soul, they were the only people that could help Roland.
Yeah.
So Roland would start entering a trance-like state. He was kept making guttural sounds. Sometimes he spoke perfect Latin, absolutely perfect Latin, which he was uneducated in. There was no reason, no explanation for why or how.
You should know that.
He should know how to speak about Satan to the priests in Latin. He even struck Father Holleran and broke his nose.
Wow.
Falling deeper and deeper into possession as the weeks went on, Roland would grin and laugh diabolically at the priests. It was believed at one point by the priests that Roland was possessed by 10 or more demons. This, I think, came across because at one point during the exorcism, when they were asking questions about what was inside him to reveal itself, your name, and so on, the number, it could either be looked at as the alphabetical X, but they took it as the numerical
The X. Roman numeral X.
Exactly. 10. Some reports I heard thought that they thought that was how long it would take. It would take 10 days. Others I heard thought that they thought it was 10 demons inside of him. And more of the articles I read claimed to think that
just speculating on different things that are 10.
Yeah, I think so. But more of them that I saw, I mean, it's all speculative for us anyway.
10 marbles at him.
Yeah. Dunk his head in the water 10 times. Dunking demons.
America runs on. No.
Yeah. He even started taunting the priests, telling each and every single priest in the room what year and day that they would be joining him in hell. That would absolutely freak me out. On the final day of the exorcism, Roland awoke with seizures, and everybody that witnessed it claimed that at this point, this far along, that Roland was so distorted and so changed by the exorcisms that he didn't even look like the same person. As Father Bishop and Father Bodrin read the prayers, his body continued contorting so badly that at one point, his shoulder was touching his feet.
Oh my God. What? How? I just really, really contorted, I guess.
And it just kept going and going and continuing until at one point, Father Bodrin noticed that the room felt different. It felt more quiet and almost calm. Then, instead of guttural screeches or terrible taunts, a new voice emerged from Roland's throat, a voice that was deep, and it boomed throughout the whole room. It said, Satan, Satan, I am Saint Michael. I command you to leave the body in the name of Dominus, immediately, now. And then Roland's body violently shaked for a few more moments, and then he was still. The priests all held their breath, waiting for what would happen next. Then, in his own voice, Roland merely stated, he's gone.
Wow.
Yeah. One account I read said that during that part of everything, that Roland actually had a vision of Saint Michael vanquishing Satan on a battlefield.
Well, okay.
Yeah, you know, everything else is believable, but I don't know about that. So it appears that it actually worked. Obviously, they were hesitant. I don't think you could experience all that and then just assume it's going to be okay. So they kept a close eye on him. But he actually went on to live on a very normal life. It never happened to him again. He's still, his name and everything is still private. But from what is reported, he actually got married, raised children, had a career, you know, and he went back to Maryland. But it's anonymous, but at the same time, it's a nice ending. He lived, he's never had to deal with it again. And that is the story of the exorcism of Roland Doe.
Wow.
So let's get into some of what people think of the whole exorcism story.
Yeah, sure.
So in terms of rebuttal for everything, a lot of critics point to the following things that maybe don't add up.
Okay.
There are 6 points. One, it's claimed that it's a really good chance that the boy was just deeply disturbed, not socialized well, and he was throwing deliberate tantrums for attention.
Yeah, so when I have a tantrum, my whole neck turns around.
When I have a tantrum, things start flying across the room.
Yeah, me too.
Now, normally I'm throwing them, but sometimes when I have kinesis abilities, I don't throw them.
Same.
With my mind power. Two, that he didn't know Latin, but he just simply repeated words that he heard clergymen say. So we had a good memory.
Okay.
I don't know what them clergymen were talking about.
I don't either.
Three, many of the details were falsified or embellished because of the priest's biases and the value that this would bring to the church.
Did it bring value to the church?
If you think about it, this thing about like, it's like proof of doing your job at the greatest opportunity. You know what I mean? So it's like if a kid starts acting weird, now you're thinking, okay, do I take him to the hospital or do I take him to a priest? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's a word for it, not redefined. It reignited, or maybe ignited for the first time. I don't know enough about that, but it made it more valid.
It gave credence to priests.
Okay. Four, the fact that very little of what occurred was accurately or properly documented. Rather, it was mostly hearsay
by like journalists or something,
or by by the bishop's diary. Five, that Roland's fingernails were never examined, thus ruining the opportunity to know whether or not some of his scratches and his marks were self-inflicted.
Okay.
And six, I don't know how true this is, but it's something I saw, something I read. Apparently Halloran, the one that guy's nose knocked in,
yeah,
never heard Roland's voice change or the fact that it went guttural, different voices, things like that. That it was all very much embellished.
Did he say that?
It was cited from him, but it wasn't a direct quote.
Okay.
These are just things I've found.
Sure.
As with everything we talk about on this podcast. So here's my opinion. Here are three beliefs that I think most people would fall under. Okay. Number one, it's fake.
Yeah.
It's fake. He faked everything. He was a troubled child. He demanded attention. So he faked everything that happened, said he would get attention. And the priests went along with it, like we already talked about, to prove their validity, inspire fear, not in fear in terms of like making people afraid, but the fact that if something unusual is happening, instead of thinking like mental illness or things like that, bring them here and we'll solve your problems.
We'll exercise them for you.
Yep. It's all about exercise. That's how you keep the demons away.
That's right.
Squats and it's high interval training, right?
Hit,
yeah. Not like we know anything about that. The second belief that I think people would fall under is true, but not the devil. So you would believe that what happened did happen scientifically, but you don't believe in the devil. Maybe it was a troubled child who had schizophrenia or he had mental illness.
I see.
And you can couple that with what the priests were trying to prove. So embellishment with the priests, along with not him faking it, everybody truly believes it, but he was dealing with a mental illness. And you can even tie under the umbrella, under this true but not the devil, that maybe something happened that wasn't religious, but something in this world that we don't fully understand.
Yeah.
And something along the lines of him having a special ability to cause these things to happen around him. Like, is it kinesis where you can move things like that? Is that what that is?
Yeah, telekinesis.
Telekinesis. It makes me think of, I think we alluded to this on a different episode, but Rose Red, I don't think you've ever seen it by Stephen King. It's like a mini-series.
Yeah, we did talk about that before.
Yeah, one of the main little girls is a little off, but she has the power to, like, move things, and mm-hmm. she make rocks fall from the sky. Not big ice cubes in, like, Michigan, but, you know, just rocks. So that's my second belief. So far we got fake, true, but not the devil. And obviously, the third main belief is that he was possessed. You can believe that the intensity of this possession is incredibly rare, but just because something is incredibly rare does not mean that it can't happen.
It's true.
And it's not like it's easy. It took him a long time. There's no exact science to it. And the first person that tried it, Father Hughes, got incredibly hurt. So it's not like, oh, we have the secret key that can unlock this blah, blah, blah and save the day. No, it's there's no exact science. You have to work. You have to 8 hours a day, six weeks and sweating and getting yelled at and spit on. It's a dirty job. But you just believe the fact that it's crazy. It's borderline ridiculous, but it happened. And he really was possessed, and the priest really exorcised the demon. And, you know, maybe St. Michael's carried them a little bit more.
Maybe.
But those are the three beliefs I have. Those are some of the criticisms. Mm-hmm. That is the story. Are you ready to go to the discussion? So before we get to the discussion, we have to thank our new patrons. This week, as of the recording of this episode, we have two new patrons. So thank you, Kayla and Kat. One of those starts with a C, one of those starts with a K, and you're probably getting it wrong in your head. But thank you both for joining our Patreon. As always, this is when we say, if you want additional content, if you want listener submission interviews, if you want quizzes, we have director cut video and audio, tons of bonus stuff. So if you're enjoying the podcast and you want to hear a little bit more, and you've heard our entire catalog, head over to Patreon, Believe in the Bizarre, check it out, see what we got going on. Thank you to all of our patrons.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yes, but also thank you to Kayla and Kat. Also, I want to say this. This is crazy. And it's a little bit tooting your own horn, but I'm not saying it from that mindset. It's more so the craziness of it to me.
Okay.
Do you know that we have listeners in over 100 countries?
What?
Now, I'm going to be very transparent with you. And those of you that have listened for a long time, this probably won't surprise you. I don't think I can name 100 countries. I don't. But I went on our platform, I looked at it, I went through, and over 100 countries we have listeners listening to this podcast.
Wow, that's really cool.
It is amazing. So seriously, even if you're not a patron, we still love you. We appreciate everybody who listens to the podcast. It's amazing. Another reminder, this Saturday, August 21st, everybody in Northeast Ohio, if you want music, food, and you want to see Charlie and I, head to Porch Rocker at Highland Square, Akron, Ohio. It's an awesome festival right there on the street. Food trucks, local crafts, artists, music, people playing. People give up their porches for indie bands and musicians to play.
It's very cool to see.
It's amazing.
It's awesome.
Just walking. You don't need, there's no tickets. You just literally find a place to park. You walk around.
That might be the most challenging part.
Yeah, parking will probably be the reason you'll hate yourself. But it's going to be awesome. We're going to be there. We have a very unique shirt that is designed only for Porch Rocker. It involves cryptids and instruments and a porch, and it's pretty dope. So that's that plug. But anyway, on to the discussion. All right, Charlie, we have possession. We got people contorting. We got shoulders touching feet. We got priests. We got scratches in the form of letters. Beds shaking.
Hearts pounding.
What are we talking about?
It was a possession.
So, what are your thoughts on all of this juju?
So, something that I thought of while you were talking about, like, the arguments against it. You don't go from 0 to 60 to 0 again. You can't do that. You know what I mean?
That is one of the arguments. So there's an argument against it. Well, this is the argument against the argument.
Yeah.
This is people saying why they don't believe it's mental illness. It wasn't schizophrenia. If it was something like that,
mm-hmm.
it would be long lasting.
You have to keep treating that.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like it would really fall under a category like that. Because, like you said, it went from 0 to 60 to 0. It's like normal life. I mean, assuming that is what truly happened.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to fit the model of what you'd expect somebody in those situations.
For mental health, no, it doesn't.
Exactly. So I 100% agree with that point.
So the priest thing, I being like the only people that wrote it down, I'm biased. I am. I'm inherently biased. I grew up with priests, like in my life. I have a family member that was a priest.
You had a rosary.
Is that several?
That's like that, right?
It's connected to that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My point being is I'm biased to inherently believe that priests are not lying. Now, were these priests lying to inflate the church or ignite a revolution of spirituality? I don't think so, but I don't know. I don't know if this would be the way to do that. I feel like you'd want to do that with positive reinforcement, not negative.
Yeah, both of those phrases you just said are much better than what I was fishing for to try and explain what they were trying to do. So I'm glad you spoke up now. I wish you would have spoke up then, but that's fine. but I totally see what you're saying. And I think it's okay to be like, is it a crazy experience? Is it unusual? Is it incredibly rare? You can say yes to all of those, but that doesn't mean it's not true.
That's right.
Even if you take a completely scientific approach, there's always anomalies. There's always outliers. You know what I mean? That's why you have to collect a bunch of data. You can't just look at one example. If this was the only example you ever looked at of somebody dealing with maybe having some of these behavioral problems, then you'd be like, well, that's random or that's BS or they're faking it or something. But if you look at across the board, this could just be one outlier where it was very true, very intense. I guess the hardest thing for... if you don't believe in religion or the devil, you might have a hard time grasping with this, which I've kind of gone into my background. I'm not a very religious person, but this stuff absolutely terrifies me. Because there's like the idea of getting possessed, you lose control of your body and you're dealing with all the... like, I always try and think, like, while the people witnessing the possession are seeing... it's almost like a mask where you're interacting with a demon, but it's like, how aware is the host of the, like, every time the body contorts, every welt.
Do you feel all those bones breaking?
Yeah. It's like, even if they go back to place, like nothing in this story. Now, obviously The Exorcist, both the novel by Blatty and then the film, go extreme.
Yeah.
You know, spinning heads, crawling down stairs like a spider. But like, if a demon made a human body twist their head around, like, I haven't heard anything about that actually happening.
Right.
But it's like, how could you survive that? But also, like, do you feel that?
Ugh.
But even the contorting, just like shoulder
yeah.
to foot, if I did that, I'm like a cucumber. I'm like broken. Like, throw him out.
He was a kid, too. He's more flexible.
That's true. He was, yeah, 13, 14. I guess that's true. Yeah, it's probably true.
Man, I was going to say something. That's gone.
I don't know about the acting out thing either.
I've seen kids act out in, like, you know, at my work, and it doesn't look like that.
No. But this could also be a rare, like,
it
okay.
It could also be an outlier.
If you feel like that it's really a demon and an outlier, you could also say maybe it is an outlier in terms of a kid with maybe, what they call it now, dissociative identity disorder, along with having some supernatural abilities.
Multiple things on top of, like, supernatural stacked with some kind of mental... but we said it probably wasn't mental health because you'd have to keep treating
And how would the priest come into that? How would they expel that if it wasn't religious? And then you get the whole St. Michael's thing that was coming in.
That, to me, is the scariest part of all of it. Because it implies that there's this good energy that has the ability to stop the bad.
That's scary to you?
It's scary because how often do we hear about something like that?
I mean, not often.
Exactly. So why was this case special? That's what makes me question that. Not that it happened, but it makes me think how bad could this case have gotten if a higher power had to step in. If it is a higher... maybe it's just different kinds of energies, like positive versus negative. Like, possession is just an overwhelming negative power.
I mean... it's definitely possible. I don't know. Like, I just don't.
We don't know. We can't. I mean, we're not. Neither of us are particularly religious either.
You're more than I am for sure. But I'm very uneducated. I'm not one of those people that aren't religious, but are very educated in it. So you can like argue with people online. I just kind of like, it's just never really been a part of my life. And I haven't needed it to. So when I hear something like this, I buy into it. I'm easily able to suspend disbelief. You know, I'm there. I'm terrified. The idea of being possessed is just absolutely horrifying. But then you step back and you're like, you know, I think that's, it's the saying. It's like, I think it was part of the Warrens. I can't remember what side it was. It was like, if you believe in the devil, then you have to believe in a God. Or if you believe in a God, then you have to believe in the devil. Mm-hmm. And it's just, so, I mean, I we can, that's more than we can really discuss. And
it's true.
We can't really accurately.
Out of our wheelhouse.
Yeah. You guys probably don't want to hear us try and. It's like, we don't have opinions that we're explaining to you guys. It's like, you're listening to us try to find our opinions. I don't know if that's enjoyable. But for right now, for August 2021, because it can always change based on how we grow or maybe ungrow as people. How do you feel on our believability scale about the exorcism of Roland Doe?
I believe it 100%.
I'm going to give it a viable. I'm very interested in to see what listeners have to say.
Me too.
About this. But that is our episode on the exorcism of Roland Doe. So thank you so much for listening to this episode on the exorcism of Roland Doe and every other episode that you've listened to.
Yeah, thank you.
Hope you've been enjoying it along with us for the ride, whether you've been around since July 2020 or whether you just started listening right now.
I'm glad you're here.
You fast forwarded all the way to like the 50 minute mark just to see what we're talking about, and we're thanking you right now. But seriously, thank you so much. And we already talked about it a little bit, so I'm not going to dive into it too much more. But if you've already listened to every episode and you're like, God, I want to listen to more, head over to Patreon Believing the Bizarre and check out, look at what we're offering. And if it sounds interesting, if it tickles your fancy, you know, feel free to join. And there's tons of bonus content on there.
And stuff may change. We'll see what happens.
For sure.
Also, if you're enjoying the show, you're like, oh man, that's great, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That'd be great.
Literally, if you listen to this and you feel it in your bones, leave a 5-star review and just write, oh man, that's great. Because then we'll know exactly where that came from. And I'll be so happy. Even if you write a little bit more, but if you put the, oh man, that's great, that'll make me so happy.
I might print that out early. That's awesome.
We'll print it and we'll put it on the wall.
Yeah.
Also, just want to shout this out. We did just get interviewed by Middle Aged and Creeped Out. And those guys are fantastic. Seriously, if you like us, if you like our style of doing these paranormal topics, highly recommend, one, check out the interview with them. It's long.
Yeah,
it's
long.
We talk about a lot, and we tell some personal experiences, too.
We've been asked before. They're there.
They're there. So if you're anxious and you're like, when are you guys going to talk about it on your podcast, you can go there and check that out. But you also,
get a shortcut.
Right. But also, if you, even beyond that interview, you really should check out, subscribe to Middle Aged and Creeped Out, because those guys are awesome. They're funny. They're just genuine guys.
Good energy.
Absolutely. Nice, it literally, people. It feels like you're just sitting down talking to some friends. Like, I listened to a handful of their episodes preparing for the interview, and I literally felt like they were friends just by listening to those, and I got amped for that interview. So again, check them out. I think you guys would really like them. But seriously, thank you so much for listening. As always, I'm Tyler.
I'm Charlie.
And catch us next week on Believing the Bizarre.
A podcast as bizarre as you are.